Chapter 18. The Camlin Road. The Camlin Road was not very different from the North Road through the Two Rivers. It was considerably wider, of course, and showed the wear of much more use, but it was still hard-packed dirt, lined on either side by trees that would not have been at all out of place in the Two Rivers, especially since only the evergreens carried a leaf. The land itself was different, though, for by midday the road entered low hills. For 2 days the road ran through the hills, cut right through them sometimes, if they were wide enough to have made the road go much out of its way, and not so big as to have made digging through too difficult. As the angle of the sun shifted each day, it became apparent that the road, for all it appeared straight to the eye, curved slowly southward as it ran east. Rand had daydreamed over Master Alvear's old map, half the boys in Emmons Field had daydreamed over it, and as he remembered, the road curved around something called the Hills of Abshire, until it reached Whitebridge. From time to time, Lan had them dismount atop one of the hills, where he could get a good view of the road both ahead and behind, and the surrounding countryside as well. The warder would study the view while the others stretched their legs or sat under the trees and ate.
"I used to like cheese," Egwene said on the third day after leaving Bearlawn.
She sat with her back to the bole of a tree, grimacing over a dinner that was once again the same as breakfast, as supper would be.
"Not a chance of tea. Nice hot tea."
She pulled her cloak tighter and shifted around the tree in a vain effort to avoid the swirling wind.
"Flatwort tea and andelay root," Nynaeve was saying to Moraine, "are best for fatigue. They clear the head and dim the burn in tired muscles."
"I am sure they do," the Aes Sedai murmured, giving Nynaeve a sidelong glance.
Nynaeve's jaw tightened, but she continued in the same tone.
"Now, if you must go without sleep..."
"No tea," Lan said sharply to Egwene. "No fire. We can't see them yet, but they are back there somewhere. A fade or two and their trollocs, and they know we are taking this road. No need to tell them exactly where we are."
"I wasn't asking," Egwene muttered into her cloak, "just regretting."
"If they know we're on the road," Perrin asked, "why don't we go straight across to Whitebridge?"
"Even land cannot travel as fast cross-country as by road," Moraine said, interrupting Nynaeve, "especially not through the hills of Abshire."
The wisdom gave an exasperated sigh. Rand wondered what she was up to. After ignoring the Aes Sedai completely for the first day, Nynaeve had spent the last two trying to talk to her about herbs. Moraine moved away from the wisdom as she went on.
"Why do you think the road curves to avoid them? And we would have to come back to this road eventually, and we might find them ahead of us instead of following."
Rand looked doubtful, and Matt muttered something about
the long way round.
"Have you seen a farm this morning?" Lan asked. "Or even the smoke from a chimney? You haven't, because it's all wilderness from Bearlawn to Whitebridge. And Whitebridge is where we must cross the Arranel. That is the only bridge spanning the Arranel south of Maradon in Saldaea."
Tom snorted and blew out his mustaches.
"What is to stop them from having someone, something, at Whitebridge already?"
From the west came the keening wail of a horn. Lan's head whipped around to stare back down the road behind them. Rand felt a chill. A part of him remained calm enough to think, 10 miles, no more.
"Nothing stops them, Gleeman," the warder said. "We trust to the light and luck. But now we know for certain there are trollocs behind us."
Moraine dusted her hands.
"It is time for us to move on."
The Aes Sedai mounted her white mare. They set off a scramble for the horses, speeded by a second winding of the horn. This time others answered, the thin sounds floating out of the west like a dirge. Rand made ready to put Cloud to a gallop right away, and everyone else settled their reins with the same urgency. Everyone except Lan and Moraine. The warder and the Aes Sedai exchanged a long look.
"Keep them moving, Moraine Sedai," Lan said finally. "I will return as soon as I am able. You will know if I fail."
Putting a hand on Mondarb's saddle, he vaulted to the back of the black stallion and galloped down the hill, heading west. The horns sounded again.
"The light go with you, last lord of the Seven Towers," Moraine said, almost too softly for Rand to hear.
Drawing a deep breath, she turned Aldeeb to the east.
"We must go on," she said,
and started off at a slow, steady trot. The others followed her in a tight file. Rand twisted once in his saddle to look for Lan, but the warder was already lost to sight among the low hills and leafless trees. Last Lord of the Seven Towers, she had called him. He wondered what that meant. He had not thought anyone besides himself had heard, but Tom was chewing the ends of his mustaches, and he had a speculative frown on his face. The Gleeman seemed to know a great many things. The horns called and answered once more behind them. Rand shifted in his saddle. They were closer this time, he was sure of it. 8 miles, maybe 7. Matt and Egwene looked over their shoulders, and Perrin hunched as if he expected something to hit him in the back. Nynaeve rode up to speak to Moraine.
"Can't we go any faster?" she asked. "Those horns are getting closer."
The Aes Sedai shook her head.
"And why do they let us know they're there? Perhaps so we will hurry on without thinking of what might be ahead."
They kept on at the same steady pace. At intervals, the horns gave cry behind them, and each time the sound was closer. Rand tried to stop thinking of how close, but the thought came unbidden at every brazen wail. 5 miles, he was thinking anxiously, when Lan suddenly burst around the hill behind them at a gallop. He came abreast of Moraine, reining in the stallion.
"At least 3 fists of Trollocs, each led by a halfman. Maybe 5.
"If you were close enough to see them," Egwene said worriedly, "they could have seen you. They could be right on your heels."
"He was not seen." Nynaeve drew herself up as everyone looked at her. "I have followed his trail, remember?"
"Hush," Moraine commanded. "Lan is telling us there are perhaps 500 Trollocs behind us."
A stunned silence followed, then Lan spoke again.
"And they are closing the gap. They will be on us in an hour or less."
Half to herself, the Aes Sedai said,
"If they had that many before, why were they not used at Emmons Field? If they did not, how did they come here since?"
"They are spread out to drive us before them," Lan said, "with scouts quartering ahead of the main parties."
"Driving us toward what?" Moraine mused.
As if to answer her, a horn sounded in the distance to the west. A low moan that was answered this time by others, all ahead of them. Moraine stopped Aldeeb. The others followed her lead, Tom and the Emmons Field folk looking around fearfully. Horns cried out before them and behind. Rand thought they held a note of triumph.
"What do we do now?" Nynaeve demanded angrily. "Where do we go?"
"All that is left is north or south," Moraine said,
more thinking aloud than answering the wisdom.
"To the south are the hills of Abshire, barren and dead, and the Taran with no way to cross, and no traffic by boat. To the north we can reach the Aranel before nightfall, and there will be a chance of a trader's boat, if the ice has broken at Maradon."
"There is a place the Trollocs will not go," Lan said, but Moraine's head whipped around sharply.
"No."
She motioned to the warder, and he put his head close to hers so their talk could not be overheard. The horns winded, and Rand's horse danced nervously.
"They're trying to frighten us," Tom growled, attempting to steady his mount.
He sounded half angry, and half as if the Trollocs were succeeding.
"They're trying to scare us until we panic and run. They'll have us then."
Egwene's head swung with every blast of a horn, staring first ahead of them, then behind, as if looking for the first Trollocs. Rand wanted to do the same thing, but he tried to hide it. He moved Cloud closer to her.
"We go north," Moraine announced.
The horns keened shrilly as they left the road and trotted into the surrounding hills. The hills were low, but the way was all up and down, with never a flat stretch, beneath bare-branched trees and through dead undergrowth. The horses climbed laboriously up one slope, only to canter down the other. Lan set a hard pace, faster than they had used in the road. Branches lashed Rand across the face and chest. Old creepers and vines caught his arms and sometimes snagged his foot right out of the stirrup. The keening horns came ever closer and ever more frequently. As hard as Lan pushed them, they were not getting farther on very quickly. They traveled 2 feet up or down for every one forward, and every foot was a scrambling effort. And the horns were coming nearer.
2 miles, he thought, maybe less.
After a time, Lan began peering first one way, then another, the hard planes of his face as close to worry as Rand had seen them.
Once the warder stood in his stirrups to stare back the way they had come. All Rand could see were trees. Lan settled back into his saddle and unconsciously pushed back his cloak to clear his sword as he resumed searching the forest. Rand met Matt's eyes questioningly, but Matt only grimaced at the warder's back and shrugged helplessly. Lan spoke then over his shoulder.
There are Trollocs nearby.
They topped a hill and started down the other side.
Some of the scouts sent ahead of the rest, probably. If we come on them, stay with me at all costs and do as I do. We must keep on the way we are going.
Blood and ashes, Tom muttered. Nynaeve motioned to Egwene to keep close.
Scattered stands of evergreens provided the only real cover, but Rand tried to peer in every direction at once, his imagination turning gray tree trunks, caught out of the corner of his eye, into Trollocs. The horns were closer, too. And directly behind them, he was sure of it. Behind and coming closer. They topped another hill. Below them, just starting up the slope, marched Trollocs carrying poles tipped with great loops of rope or long hooks. Many Trollocs. The line stretched far to either side, the ends out of sight. But at its center, directly in front of Lan, a fade road. The Murdrel seemed to hesitate as the humans appeared atop the hill, but in the next instant it produced a sword with the black blade Rand remembered so queasily, and waved it over its head. The line of Trollocs scrambled forward. Even before the Murdrel moved, Lan's sword was in his hand.
"Stay with me," he cried,
and Mondar plunged down the slope toward the Trollocs.
"For the Seven Towers," he shouted.
Rand gulped and booted the Grey forward. The whole group of them streamed after the warder. He was surprised to find Tam's sword in his fist. Caught up by Lan's cry, he found his own.
"Manetherin! Manetherin!"
Perrin took it up.
"Manetherin! Manetherin!"
But Matt shouted,
"Karayan Kaldazar! Karayan Alessandra! Al Alessandra!"
The Matt's head turned from the Trollocs to the riders charging toward him. The black sword froze over its head, and the opening of its cowl swiveled, searching among the oncoming horsemen. Then Lan was on the Murdrel as the human folk fell on the Trolloc line. Warder's blade met black steel from the forges of Thakandar with a clang like a great bell, the toll echoing in the hollow, a flash of blue light filling the air like sheet lightning. Beast-muzzled, almost men, swarmed around each of the humans, catch poles and hooks flailing. Only Lan and the Murdrel did they avoid. Those two fought in a clear circle, black horses matching step for step, swords matching stroke for stroke. The air flashed and pealed. Cloud rolled his eyes and screamed, rearing and lashing out with his hooves at the snarling, sharp-toothed faces surrounding him. Heavy bodies crowded shoulder to shoulder around him. Digging his heels in ruthlessly, Rand forced the Grey on regardless, swinging his sword with little of the skill Lan had tried to impart, hacking as if hewing wood.
"Egwene!"
Desperately, he searched for her as he kicked the Grey onward, slashing a path through the hairy bodies as though chopping undergrowth. Moraine's white mare dashed and cut at the slightest touch of the Aes Sedai's hands on the reins. Her face was as hard as Lan's as her staff lashed out. Flame enveloped Trollocs, then burst with a roar that left misshapen forms unmoving on the ground. Nynaeve and Egwene rode close to the Aes Sedai with frantic urgency, teeth bared almost as fiercely as the Trollocs, belt knives in hand. Those short blades would be no use at all if a Trolloc came close. Rand tried to turn Cloud toward them, but the Grey had the bit in his teeth. Screaming and kicking, Cloud struggled forward however hard Rand tugged at the reins. Around the three women, a space opened as Trollocs tried to flee from Moraine's staff, but as they attempted to avoid her, she sought them out. Fires roared and the Trollocs howled in rage and fury. Above the roar and howl crashed the tolling of the warder's sword against the Murdrals. The air flared blue around them, flared again, again. A noose on the end of a pole swept at Rand's head. With an awkward slash, he cut the catch pole in two, then hacked the goat-faced Trolloc that held it. A hook caught his shoulder from behind and tangled in his cloak, jerking him backwards. Frantically, almost losing his sword, he clutched the pommel of his saddle to keep his seat. Cloud twisted, shrieking. Rand hung on to saddle and reins desperately. He could feel himself slipping, inch by inch, falling to the hook. Cloud swung around. For an instant, Rand saw Perrin, half out of his saddle, struggling to wrest his axe away from three Trollocs.
They had him by one arm and both legs. Cloud plunged, and only Trollocs filled Rand's eyes. A Trolloc dashed in and seized Rand's leg, forcing his foot free of the stirrup. Panting, he let go of the saddle to stab it. Instantly, the hook pulled him out of the saddle to Cloud's hindquarters. His death grip on the reins was all that kept him from the ground. Cloud reared and shrieked, and in that same moment, the pulling vanished. The Trolloc at his leg threw up its hands and screamed. All of the Trollocs screamed, a howl like all the dogs in the world gone mad. Around the humans, Trollocs fell writhing to the ground, tearing at their hair, clawing their own faces. All of the Trollocs, biting at the ground, snapping at nothing, howling, howling, howling. Then Rand saw the Murdrol. Still upright in the saddle of its madly dancing horse, black sword still flailing, it had no head.
"It won't die until nightfall,"
Tom had to shout between heavy breaths over the unrelenting screams.
"Not completely. That is what I've heard, anyway."
"Ride!"
Lan shouted angrily. The warder had already gathered Moraine and the other two women and had them halfway up the next hill.
"This is not all of them!"
Indeed, the horns dirged again above the shrieks of the Trollocs on the ground to east and west and south. For a wonder, Matt was the only one who had been unhorsed. Rand trotted toward him, but Matt tossed a noose away from him with a shudder, gathered his bow, and scrambled into his saddle unaided, though rubbing at his throat. The horns bayed like hounds with the scent of a deer. Hounds closing in. If Lan had set a hard pace before, he doubled it now, till the horses scrabbled uphill faster than they had gone down before, then nearly threw themselves at the other side. But still the horns came nearer, until the guttural shouts of pursuit were heard whenever the horns paused, until eventually the humans reached a hilltop just as Trollocs appeared on the next hill behind them. The hilltop blackened with Trollocs, snouted, distorted faces howling, and three Murdrol overawed them all. Only 100 spans separated the two parties. Rand's heart shriveled like an old grape.
Three.
The Murdrol's black swords rose as one. Trollocs boiled down the slope, thick, triumphant cries rising, catchpoles bobbing above as they ran. Moraine climbed down from Aldeeb's back. Calmly, she removed something from her pouch, unwrapped it. Rand glimpsed dark ivory. The Ungrial. With Ungrial in one hand and staff in the other, the Aes Sedai set her feet, facing the onrushing Trollocs and the Fade's black swords, raised her staff high, and stabbed it down into the earth. The ground rang like an iron kettle struck by a mallet. The hollow clang dwindled, faded away. For an instant then, it was silent. Everything was silent. The wind died. The Trolloc cries stilled. Even their charge forward slowed and stopped. For a heartbeat, everything waited. Slowly the dull ringing returned, changing to a low rumble, growing until the earth moaned. The ground trembled beneath Cloud's hooves. This was Aes Sedai work like the stories told about. Rand wished he were 100 miles away. The tremble became a shaking that set the trees around them quivering. The gray stumbled and nearly fell. Even Mondarb and riderless Aldeeb staggered as if drunk, and those who rode had to cling to reins and manes, to anything, to keep their seats. The Aes Sedai still stood as she had begun, holding the Ungrial and her upright staff thrust into the hilltop. And neither she nor the staff moved an inch, for all that the ground shook and shivered around her. Now the ground rippled, springing out from in front of her staff, lapping toward the Trollocs like ripples on a pond, ripples that grew as they ran, toppling old bushes, flinging dead leaves into the air, growing, becoming waves of earth, rolling toward the Trollocs. Trees in the hollow lashed like switches in the hands of small boys. On the far slope, Trollocs fell in heaps, tumbled over and over by the raging earth. Yet, as if the ground were not rearing all around them, the Murdrol moved forward in a line, their dead black horses never missing a step, every hoof in unison. Trollocs rolled on the ground all about the black steeds, howling and grabbing at the hillside that heaved them up, but the Murdrol came slowly on. Moraine lifted her staff, and the earth stilled, but she was not done.
She pointed to the hollow between the hills, and flame gouted from the ground, a fountain 20 feet high. She flung her arms wide, and the fire raced to left and right as far as the eye could see, spreading into a wall separating humans and Trollocs. The heat made Rand put his hands in front of his face, even on the hilltop. The Murdrol's black mounts, whatever strange powers they had, screamed at the fire, reared and fought their riders as the Murdrol beat at them, trying to force them through the flames.
"Blood and ashes," Matt said faintly.
Rand nodded numbly. Abruptly, Moraine wavered and would have fallen had Lan not leaped from his horse to catch her.
"Go on,"
he told the others. The harshness of his voice was at odds with the gentle way he lifted the Aes Sedai to her saddle.
"That fire won't burn forever. Hurry! Every minute counts!"
The wall of flame roared as if it would indeed burn forever, but Rand did not argue. They galloped northward as fast as they could make their horses go. The horns in the distance shrilled out disappointment, as if they already knew what had happened, then fell silent. Lan and Moraine soon caught up with the others, though Lan led Aldib by the reins while the Aes Sedai swayed and held the pommel of her saddle with both hands.
"I will be all right soon," she said to their worried looks.
She sounded tired, yet confident, and her gaze was as compelling as ever.
"I am not at my strongest when working with earth and fire. A small thing."
The two of them moved into the lead again at a fast walk. Rand did not think Moraine could stay in the saddle at any faster pace. Nynaeve rode forward beside the Aes Sedai, steadying her with a hand. For a time, as the party went on across the hills, the two women whispered, then the wisdom delved into her cloak and handed a small packet to Moraine. Moraine unfolded it and swallowed the contents. Nynaeve said something more, then fell back with the others, ignoring their questioning looks. Despite their circumstances, Rand thought she had a slight look of satisfaction. He did not really care what the wisdom was up to. He rubbed the hilt of his sword continually, and whenever he realized what he was doing, he stared down at it in wonder.
So that's what a battle is like.
He could not remember much of it, not any particular part. Everything ran together in his head, a melted mass of hairy faces and fear. Fear and heat. It had seemed as hot as a midsummer noon while it was going on. He could not understand that. The icy wind was trying to freeze beads of perspiration all over his face and body. He glanced at his two friends. Matt was scrubbing sweat off his face with the edge of his cloak. Perrin, staring at something in the distance and not liking what he was seeing, appeared unaware of the beads glistening on his forehead. The hills grew smaller and the land began to level out, but instead of pressing on, land stopped. Nynaeve moved as if to rejoin Moraine, but the warder's look kept her away. He and the Aes Sedai rode ahead and put their heads together, and from Moraine's gestures it became apparent they were arguing. Nynaeve and Tom stared at them, the wisdom frowning worriedly, the gleeman muttering under his breath and pausing to stare back the way they had come. But everyone else avoided looking at them altogether. Who knew what might come out of an argument between an Aes Sedai and a warder? After a few minutes, Egwene spoke to Rand quietly, casting an uneasy eye at the still arguing pair.
"Those things you were shouting at the Trollocs."
She stopped as if unsure how to proceed.
"What about them?"
Rand asked. He felt a little awkward. War cries were all right for warders. Two Rivers folk did not do things like that, whatever Moraine said. But if she made fun of him over it... Matt must have repeated that story 10 times.
"And badly," Tom put in.
Matt grunted in protest.
"However he told it," Rand said. "We've all heard it any number of times. Besides, we had to shout something. I mean, that's what you do at a time like that. You heard Lan."
"And we have a right," Perrin added thoughtfully. "Moraine says we're all descended from those Manetheran people. They fought the Dark One, and we're fighting the Dark One. That gives us a right." Egwene sniffed as if to show what she thought of that.
"I wasn't talking about that. What was it you were shouting, Matt?"
Matt shrugged uncomfortably.
"I don't remember."
He stared at them defensively.
"Well, I don't. It's all foggy. I don't know what it was or where it came from or what it means."
He gave a self-deprecating laugh.
"I don't suppose it means anything." I think it does," Egwene said slowly. "When you shouted, I thought, just for a minute, I thought I understood you, but it's all gone now.
She sighed and shook her head.
Perhaps you're right. Strange what you can imagine at a time like that, isn't it?
Karai on Kaldazar,
Moraine said. They all twisted to stare at her.
Karai on Elisande. Al Elisande. For the honor of the Red Eagle. For the honor of the Rose of the Sun. The Rose of the Sun. The ancient war cry of Mon Etherin, and the war cry of its last king. Eldraine was called the Rose of the Sun.
Moraine's smile took in Egwene and Matt both, though her gaze may have rested a moment longer on him than on her.
The blood of Ared's line is still strong in the two rivers. The old blood sings.
Matt and Egwene looked at each other while everyone else looked at them both. Egwene's eyes were wide and her mouth kept quirking into a smile that she bit back every time it began, as if she was not quite sure just how to take this talk of the old blood. Matt was sure, from the scowling frown on his face. Rand thought he knew what Matt was thinking, the same thing he was thinking. If Matt was a descendant of the ancient kings of Mon Etherin, maybe the Trollocs were really after him and not all three of them. The thought made him ashamed. His cheeks colored, and when he caught a guilty grimace on Perrin's face, he knew Perrin had been having the same thought.
I can't say that I have ever heard the like of this, Tom said after a minute.
He shook himself and became brusque.
Another time I might even make a story out of it. But right now... Do you intend to remain here for the rest of the day, Aes Sedai?
No,
Moraine replied, gathering her reins. A trollic horn keened from the south as if to emphasize her word. More horns answered, east and west. The horses whickered and sidled about nervously.
They have passed the fire, Lan said calmly.
He turned to Moraine.
You are not strong enough for what you intend. Not yet. Not without rest. And neither Myrdral nor Trolloc will enter that place.
Moraine raised a hand as if to cut him off, then sighed and let it fall instead.
Very well, she said irritably. You are right, I suppose, but I would rather there was any other choice.
She pulled her staff from under the girth strap of her saddle.
Gather in around me, all of you, as close as you can. Closer.
Rand urged Cloud near the Aes Sedai's mare. At Moraine's insistence, they kept on crowding closer in a circle around her, until every horse had its head stretched over the croup or withers of another. Only then was the Aes Sedai satisfied. Then, without speaking, she stood in the stirrups and swung her staff over their heads, stretching to make certain it covered everyone. Rand flinched each time the staff passed over him. A tingle ran through him with every pass. He could have followed the staff without seeing it just by following the shivers as it moved over people. It was no surprise to him that Lan was the only one not affected. Abruptly, Moraine thrust the staff out to the west. Dead leaves whirled into the air and branches whipped as if a dust devil ran along the line she pointed to. As the invisible whirlwind vanished from sight, she settled back into her saddle with a sigh.
To the Trollocs, she said, our scents and our tracks will seem to follow that. The Myrdraw will see through it in time, but by then...
By then, Lan said, we will have lost ourselves.
Your staff is very powerful, Egwene said, earning a sniff from Nynaeve.
Moraine made a clicking sound.
I have told you, child, things do not have power. The one power comes from the true source, and only a living mind can wield it. This is not even an Angreal, merely an aid to concentration.
Wearily, she slid the staff back under her girth strap.
Lan?
Follow me, the warder said, and keep quiet. It will ruin everything if the Trollocs hear us.
He led the way north again, not at the crashing pace they had been making, but rather in the quick walk with which they had traveled the Camelin Road. The land continued to flatten, though the forest remained as thick. Their path was no longer straight as it had been before, for Lan chose a route that meandered over hard ground and rocky outcrops, and he no longer let them force their way through tangles of brush, instead taking the time to make their way around. Now and again he dropped to the rear, intently studying the trail they made. If anyone so much as coughed, it drew a sharp grunt from him.
Nynaeve rode beside the Aes Sedai, concern battling dislike on her face. And there was a hint of something more, Rand thought, almost as if the wisdom saw some goal in sight. Moraine's shoulders were slumped, and she held her reins in the saddle with both hands, swaying with every step Aldeeb took. It was plain that laying the false trail, small as that might have seemed beside producing an earthquake and a wall of flame, had taken a great deal out of her, strength she no longer had to lose. Rand almost wished the horns would start again. At least they were a way of telling how far back the Trollocs were, and the Fades. He kept looking behind them, and so was not the first to see what lay ahead. When he did, he stared perplexed. A great irregular mass stretched off to either side out of sight, in most places as high as the trees that grew right up to it, with even taller spires here and there. Leafless vines and creepers covered it, all in thick layers. A cliff? The vines will make climbing easy, but we'll never get the horses up. Suddenly, as they rode a little closer, he saw a tower. It was clearly a tower, not some kind of rock formation, with an odd pointed dome on the top. A city, he said. And a city wall, and the spires were guard towers on the wall. His jaw dropped. It had been 10 times as big as Berelon, 50 times as big. Matt nodded. A city, he agreed. But what's a city doing in the middle of a forest like this? And without people, Perrin said. When they looked at him, he pointed to the wall. Would people let vines grow over everything like that? You know how creepers can tear down a wall. Look how it's fallen. What Rand saw adjusted itself in his mind again. It was as Perrin said. Under almost every low space in the wall was a brush-covered hill, rubble from the collapsed wall above. No two of the guard towers were the same height. I wonder what city it was, Egwene mused. I wonder what happened to it. I don't remember anything from Papa's map. It was called Aridhol, Moraine said. In the days of the Trolloc Wars, it was an ally of Manetherin. Staring at the massive walls, she seemed almost unaware of the others, even of Nynaeve, who supported her in the saddle with a hand on her arm. Later, Aridhol died, and this place was called by another name. What name? Matt asked.
Here, Lan said. He stopped Mondarb in front of what had once been a gate wide enough for 50 men to march through abreast. Only the broken, vine-encrusted watchtowers remained. Of the gates, there was no sign. We enter here.
Trolloc horns shrieked in the distance. Lan peered in the direction of the sound, then looked at the sun, halfway down toward the treetops in the west.
They have discovered it's a false trail. Come, we must find shelter before dark.
What name? Matt asked again.
Moraine answered as they rode into the city.
Shadar Logoth, she said. It was called Shadar Logoth.